just another word of encouragement. Many of you heard that the Knights of Columbus are having a breakfast after Mass. It was said, announced that it was a delicious breakfast. I can verify because I got to try it early this morning. It is delicious, biscuits and gravy, fruit and eggs. And encourage you to go down. The Knights of Columbus is a wonderful organization for men to be together, support wonderful causes, all types of social needs outside of the parish. But today the proceeds are for a better choice. So a double reason why to go down, one to support the Knights, but secondly to support the pro-life organization, a better choice. So I encourage all of you to go down and join afterwards. Early this morning, the 6:30 Mass, usually my sentiment, as I'm not an early morning person, this parish is making its mark on me and my personality throughout the weeks. So the first thing I'm often thinking about is coffee. But I came in early this morning, and one of the people who was helping out with the Mass asked, "Father, how are you?" And for some strange reason today, I had a big smile on my face and thought in my heart, well, it's the day of the Lord's resurrection. But I also thought that the Lord wasn't the only one to rise from the dead this week. Notre Dame certainly seems to have made a comeback. I saw it after the fact. Last week, Notre Dame had a catastrophic loss at their season opener at home to an unranked opponent. And I had watched at the beginning of the week. It was ironic in that this had been produced perhaps about a month ago, but I had waited until after last Saturday's catastrophe to watch it. And it's only four episodes, and so I saw the first two. The last two are not out yet, but I saw it after the fact. The first episode was highlighting the coach and going through all the coaches in Notre Dame's great history, their legacy, that there were some coaches that had won a national title in their third year. And so they asked the head coach, "Is this your year?" Obviously, he didn't say yes, it was, but certainly the hopes looked much worse after last Saturday. The next episode was about some of the star recruits that they had received. What looked to be a wonderful team and very talented players. Obviously, anyone at that level of competition is a wonderful athlete. Great programs, great coaches, all in place. But it was a quandary and looked awfully humiliating after the fact of last Saturday that this isn't what a national title season looks like. These things don't seem to happen to national championship teams. This defies my hopes, this defies my expectations, and all week long I was struggling to understand it. How does this work? How do all of the pieces be in place, and how does this happen? And perhaps the defile of these expectations and hopes, pouring water on that enthusiasm, is the difficulty that any fan bears, but in some sense is a remark or a sign, a pointer of what happens in any suffering. Yes, obviously seeing your team crumble with such high hopes and expectations is barely scratching the surface of worthwhile sufferings in our life. But I think it's an image of something that we can point to. We see this gospel scene that we've heard 1,000 times. Peter and the disciples with Jesus, and Jesus telling them what's going to happen. And they too had very eager hopes and expectations, desires, projections of what the future was going to look like. They had long awaited their Messiah, and they understood him to be one who was going to bring them political freedom. Oh Lord, if we had that figure today in our life, in our country. But they expected this, someone to come and liberate them and set them free, fill them with peace and strength. And so Peter's reaction to this response of the necessity of the cross is in relationship to this shattering of hopes and expectations. This is the same reason why perhaps that the Lord tells them not to tell anyone about it. How strange that we as disciples are called to share this bubbling enthusiasm and this fact of this encounter with Christ and what it fills our hearts with, what it fills our life with. We're called to share this good news. The word of this battle, gospel, the good news of this battle, the victory, we're called to share this. But why is it that their enthusiasm to go and speak is seemingly snuffed? But perhaps Christ knew the expectations and the hopes that were misplaced and misaligned by the people at the time. And he, as a good God and one who was giving ultimately himself as salvation, not just setting people free, but giving himself as salvation, wanted by their silence and by the refusal to allow people to misunderstand him, say, I will be the one who is to speak of my life and my truth. I am the one to give it to the world. But this rebuke of Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do. What a powerful rebuke. A rebuke that happens firstly by Peter to the side. He takes Jesus aside, perhaps as to not embarrass him and say, Lord, you understand what we're expecting. You understand what we're hoping for. This isn't what that looks like. This isn't according to the pattern of my expectations or my hopes. What's with this? And the Lord rebukes him in front of all. And it's a remarkable power of Christ speaking to dispel this struggle to move towards the cross. Thinking as God does. God in the person of Jesus Christ, who has set his face like flint. If that's not an image of masculinity, I don't know what is. But Jesus Christ and his facing of the cross, his movement towards it, and banishing anything that keeps us from going in that direction, that is what he came to do. Thinking as God does, not as human beings do. For Peter expected the opposition to be crushed with a hammer and with swords, as we see in the garden. To remove all opposition, remove suffering, remove all obstacles, but that is not thinking as God does, that's thinking as human beings do. So that begs the question for all of us, hopefully from the depths of our heart, in the flesh of our circumstances of our life, not in a theological or theoretical sense. How is it that God thinks of our suffering? We heard a marvelous phrase in our opening prayer today in our collect for this Mass, the 24th Sunday of Ordinary Time, that we may feel the effect of your mercy. What a strange expression. Wouldn't it perhaps be higher and better if we merely understood it with our mind apart from feeling? That we had some purified perception of things unaffected by the way our emotions were moving? No. My brothers and sisters, Christ in his great love wants to employ every single thing inside of us. Everything. Our thoughts, our affections, our will, our understanding, all of it summarized and included, integrated into this act of love. That's what he wants. And so when we say this phrase, to think about how God sees suffering, to think as God does in the face of suffering, we have to look at this spewing forth of mercy in the heart of Jesus Christ. What does Jesus think? What does Jesus feel about suffering? And we can see it acutely throughout the entirety of the Gospels. A mother in tears because of the loss of her son. What does he do? Pick up your cross, grit it, grit your teeth, pick it up and come follow me. No, he raises her son to life. Friends who come to him begging for their friend who cannot see, what does he do? Tell your friend to pick up his cross and follow me daily. No, he opens his eyes. He opens his eyes. So clearly, Christ has a mission. Christ has set his face, in some sense, against suffering. Yes, yes, yes. We cannot love it and think that Christ hasn't come to bring healing. He has. He has come to bring healing and victory. But the same one who brings healing and victory stands in the garden, what? Listening to podcasts about what happened last week and how we ended up in this situation? No, he's not wrestling for some comprehension with his mind. His heart is wanting to soar, to flap the wings of his heart in ascent to the Father. That's how Christ thinks of suffering, as an occasion to offer his life. And that's how he utters those beautiful and mysterious words upon the cross. Not, Father, I understand why this is happening. No, he says something much more beautiful than that. Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. And that, my brothers and sisters, is perhaps the remarkable and real revolution that Peter was being invited to. Not a political one or a temporal one, but this long-term, eternal victory of love over the real circumstances of their lives. I can't sit here and spell out all of the ways that suffering afflicts every single one of us. It does, and our life isn't just about sufferings. There's times of immense joy. There's no ignoring that fact. There are happy mornings, even though it's early with not a lot of sleep and not a cup of coffee. There are beautiful moments of joy in our life, but there are times of suffering. And perhaps the more we grow in love, the more we come to suffer. And as a Christian, we have to develop this sentiment to not think as humans do, but to think as God does. Father Jacques Philippe offers three types of responses in the faces of suffering. And again, I don't say this theoretically. I hope all of us can at least call to mind, or at least these words scratch up to the surface, some inconvenience or suffering in our life. And if not, they will one day. But he said that there's a response. The first one is rebellion. That's the first choice, and that's thinking as human beings do in the face of suffering. We're going to pick up our arms and overthrow whatever system is oppressing us. And yes, there are times that we have to do that. And certain injustices, there are certain times that harsh words need to be spoken, difficult conversations. Those things do have to happen. But as a general disposition towards our suffering, that's not a good one to be in the habit of or to be so familiar with. Secondly, he says, is resignation, but not in a good sense. A sense of indifference that has given up hope. As if after last week, as a Notre Dame fan, I would have said, there's no hope in the rest of the season. I'm not a fan anymore. I don't care about it. Firstly, it's lying to myself. But secondly, there's no sign of life in that type of response to suffering. The real response, thinking as God does to the face of suffering, he says, is one of consent. And that is this movement of the heart and seeds of hope taking place. This, my brothers and sisters, is the revolution of Jesus Christ. Hope and joy in the face of suffering. And the sheer marvel and irony that the one whose hands and feet are nailed to the cross is wearing a crown of thorn, mocking his apparent kingship, with a spear thrust into his side, is the most free one that has ever lived. This, my brothers and sisters, is the revolution that we are invited to be a part of. And what a peace and joy it is, and what cries of freedom ring out from the hearts of Christian in the darkness of the world when we join this battle cry of the Savior. Father, into your hands I commend my spirit.